you won't find them in the club, cause they are all up in the pub. They're our favorite nerds, they're the Twisted Sisters. You may like them, you may not, but you should probably give them a shot. They have the greatest words, they're the Twisted Sisters.
Hello, and welcome to our conversation. I'm Becky.
I'm Callie.
And I'm Amanda.
And we are the Twisted Sisters. Well, hey, ladies. It's good to see you again.
Hi.
So,
yeah.
What are y'all drinking?
I am kind of double-fisting it today. I have coffee, so that's not alcoholic. But then I have one of the beers that you brought, Becky, when you came to visit last week.
Which one is
the elevator wheat?
Okay.
Elevator wheat. Yeah. I really like that one.
Yeah, it's from Coop.
It was a nice
it works here in Oklahoma City.
Yeah. Yeah, it's just a nice drinkable wheat beer. I'm enjoying it.
Cool. Very good.
And I'm drinking water because I'm getting on the elliptical a little later and I'd like to be able to stay on the elliptical. It's all right. I'm not coordinated enough to do an elliptical anyway. So then drinking and getting on an elliptical could be quite bad. So I'm only going to do just water until all of that's done. However, I did taste the not, it's scotch, right? It was a scotch. I'm not getting any nods from back there. But anyway. Yeah, no, it's called the Knot, like KNOT. Uh-huh. Oh. And it's another one that had I think it's an Irish scotch or an Irish whiskey or something. And it had a really cool bottle and it tasted a little better, but it's still like fire. So I just think scotch is, I don't know if I'm ever going to come around to scotch. I keep tasting it and then, yeah, it's just fire.
It's still not good.
It's just fire. Yeah.
Yeah. So I have, Matt, I think it was Matt McGraw in the pub was talking about how he had a pineapple cider a few weeks ago. And I like pineapple and I like cider. So I went to my local liquor store here and actually for a totally different reason. I was actually going to see if they had a Boulevard Imperial Stout. That it was a limited release that I got when I was up there in Kansas City in February, and I really liked it. But he couldn't find it. He was looking, he didn't have it there in the store, and he was looking on the computer to see if he could order it, and he didn't see it at all. I was kind of wandering the aisles, and I saw this pineapple cider. I'm like, yes, I am getting that. So this is from Ace California Cider Company. And it is a just pineapple hard cider. It pretty much just tastes like pineapple juice, which is fine with me because I love pineapple juice. Actually, it was funny in college. A friend of mine gave me, it was like perfume for either my birthday or Christmas. I don't remember which. And, she packed it in a pineapple juice container because a pineapple juice box because that's what we had. And so I opened it up and I thought it was pineapple juice and I got really excited. really excited. And then I opened it up. I'm like, well, this is cool too, but I was really excited about the pineapple juice.
Yeah. So,
yes. That is me. The pineapple cider. Yeah. Yeah.
Actually, that is the exact thing that Jen got. So after you
no way.
Tuesday?
How funny.
Oh, Wednesday? So Wednesday, so Jen stayed one extra day, and she picked me up from work on Wednesday, and then we went to Updown, which is an adult, vintage gamer arcade bar place, and it was empty. There was, no one there, because they had just opened, and so she and I got a beer, and she got that pineapple cider stuff, really, really good, and then we just played, pinball, and she played Mario Kart. Or Super Nintendo Mario, and I did a little bit of some other games. But, yeah, we just hung out there for a couple hours. And so, yeah, that's the exact same thing that she got.
Nice.
That is so cool. Really fun. I wish she could have stayed next to day, Becky.
I know, man. But, with Like, I just got home about 2 hours ago from being in Kansas City. I went up there for the Energy FC season opener. It was against the Swope Park Rangers, who are kind of they're like our second rival. Like, I think we kind of have, I don't know. Maybe we like to have a lot of rivals, but Tulsa really is the first one because they're in state, and we have a derby with them. So, they're, I mean, they're really our first rival. But then, Swope Park is kind of our second one because our coach used to play for Sporting Kansas City. He was the goalie for them for a few years, and our first affiliation with a major league team was with Sporting Kansas City too, until last year they decided that they were going to make their own farm team or whatever, USL team. And so that's the Swope Park Rangers. And so they dropped us for their own team. So we kind of, and also their captain used to play for us too. So we have a lot of connections with them. So it's kind of a one of our major rivalries. I think another, I'm trying to think, I think another big rivalry that started up last year was Rio Grande Valley. They were new last year, and they it was just like rough games every time with them. So yeah.
I
We'll
wish you
probably
guys
ask
could
you,
see my
like,
face right now
physically.
because I am not a soccer nerd in any way, shape, or form.
Yeah,
And I have
I
absolutely
said the
no
word
idea
derby, and you probably had no idea what I was talking about.
what you're talking about. No, I'm just like, okay, that's all great. But I'm sure that there are listeners who are soccer nerds who know exactly what you're talking
I
about.
know there are pub members who are. Okay, the
Oh, yeah, I'm
Sporting
sure there
Kansas
are.
City is a major league soccer team in Kansas City.
Oh, okay.
Derby is
Isn't
a
your team the
game
energy?
series. Yeah, Oklahoma City
You're on the
Energy.
energy.
No,
No.
I'm just a fan.
Oh, you're just a fan. Okay.
Yeah,
I don't
the
know.
Energy is actually a men's team, so
Oh, the
I
energy's a
could
men's
not be on
team.
it. Yeah, so
Oh.
Oklahoma City has a USL soccer team. So it's a professional soccer team, but it's second tier. So MLS, Major League Soccer, is the top tier. Second tier now is USL and NASL. Like, we're sharing it. We used to be third tier until this year, and now we're sharing second tier with NASL. We're kind of hoping that we stay second tier and NASL goes down, because they're kind of dying, actually. But anyway.
I'm just surprised there's so much soccer in the United States, period, but I guess we're getting a lot of immigrants that come in and are really big into soccer, so
Yeah,
that would
it's
make
getting bigger and
sense.
bigger. Yeah.
Because, yeah.
And the thing is, I think a lot of people are putting their kids into soccer too, like, have been putting their kids into soccer for the past 10, 20 years, and now they're becoming
Yeah.
adults and playing, and
Okay.
or the kids are excited about it, and so they like get their parents in on it too, like, excited about it. So, yeah, it's really growing in the US now,
Wow,
so
that's
I'm
a big
excited
deal.
about that. Yeah. Oh, so all of
I am
that to
too.
say, I'm not really sure why. Oh, okay. So me staying another night, that's what it was.
Oh,
So
yeah.
I left your place on Wednesday and drove home, and got home. I was gonna go to choir practice, but I was so tired that I didn't. I just went home and kind of unpacked and ended up going to bed. And then yesterday, Saturday, so Saturday morning, I drive up to Kansas City for the match, and then I came back this morning. So I
Yeah.
had 2 days at work. So, like, came back Wednesday night, slept, and then Thursday, Friday went to work, and then went up there. So yeah, I wish I could have stayed longer too, but I already had that trip planned to go up to Kansas City for the match. Like,
Sure.
that's we've been talking about
Yeah.
that since we I think I mean like 3 or 4 weeks probably since we heard about it, heard about the schedule.
Yeah.
But
Yeah, well, still, there's always more. I mean, I know you're kind of like tripped out for a while.
for real,
So
man.
hopefully. So maybe next time, either I visit you or you visit me or whatever, or we can both go visit Callie because we haven't had a chance to meet you in person yet.
I know, still.
Yeah, we definitely need to get together at some point. It would be good. Yeah, we should get together in Denver. Denver's awesome. Yeah. I like Alamosa, but Alamosa, you know, tiny towns are usually for the people who live in the tiny towns. Because there's just, I mean, I say there's not that much to do, but today I held an alligator, so there actually is stuff to do. Just
if you want to hold alligators.
Depends on who you are and what your interests are, I suppose. So, yeah. That was fun. We have an alligator wrestling class just down the street. So
wait, what? Yeah. Why?
Well, how because we have an alligator farm here. So alligators and crocodiles and caimans are really resilient animals, and they can live in pretty much any environment. And it's very, very cold here. So there's some people who had a tilapia farm in order to supply the local restaurants and just people with fish. And in order to help clean up the tilapia farm, they bought a couple of alligators, and then they became an alligator rescue farm. And then after that, they just started rescuing pets, period. So people who would buy exotic pets and they got too big for them to handle, they would just call them, drop them off there or whatever. And now they have a reptile zoo. It's just it's reptiles and amphibians.
Okay.
They have a couple of horses now too. So they're just going full on zoo over there. But it used to be just a couple of alligators. They have Morris the alligator there, the one from Happy Gilmore. So he's there. And I just went into his cage today and he hissed at me. It was disgusting, but I have it on video. So there you go.
Becky's face.
that's what we do in tiny towns.
That's hilarious. We get
famous alligators and, you know.
Yeah, my tiny town doesn't have anything like that. I mean, we'll have like a petting zoo in our Scandinavian Days Festival. That's the first weekend in June every year. But, you know, that's goats and sheep and...
Oh, we also have
animals.
Not alligators.
You know, we're in a valley surrounded by mountains, and so we have some caves not too far away from here, and you can take a naked tour of the caves.
Well, okay.
Good to know.
We sent our pastor on a tour of the caves, not knowing it was a naked tour. So, you know, that was fun. We were like, hey, he just moved here. We should send him on something fun. So we sent him on a tour. Turns out it was right at the nudist colony. They're the ones who lead it. So there you go.
Yes. Way to get him.
Oh, my God.
That's how you find out if your pastor is going to be cool with stuff or not.
Yeah. For real.
Oh my God.
Yeah, he's great. He was great. He moved away now, but he was great for a while.
How long did he stay?
8 years.
Oh, hey.
Yep. He made it. Not bad.
Okay. Well, let's move on from that. Oh, well, I guess one thing I was going to say is that I'm the sister who lives in a thriving metropolis of Oklahoma City.
Yeah.
The only city girl.
Yeah. Yep.
I mean, I'm like an hour from Des Moines, and I drive to Des Moines every day for work. But my town itself is on a bowl. Pretty tiny. Mm-hmm.
It's kind of charming.
All right.
So anyway, okay, let's move on.
Thank you. I'm glad you asked.
Okay, so what are your, what am I thinking? Your fangirling about today.
Well, I went to go see Beauty and the Beast.
Yeah.
I knew Emma Watson was going to be in it. Emma Watson. Yeah, Emma Watson. I knew she was going to be in it, but I didn't know any of the other actors because I hadn't really read up on it very much or, you know, I don't have time for getting ready for a movie. I just took my kids.
Yeah.
And then I see them painting the guy's face before he becomes the beast, and I was like, it's Matthew! It's Matthew!
Oh, yeah, is it Dan Stevens?
Yeah, because he's from, you know, he's Matthew from
Downton Abbey.
Downton Abbey. And, you know.
Yeah.
So at the very end, I'm like, he's alive! And my little daughter's like, he's alive! And I'm like, but for me, for a whole different reason than for you. So, yeah, I was pretty excited about it. Yeah.
No, that was like, destroyed me when Matthew died in Downton Abbey.
Exactly. That's when I quit watching. I was like, I can't watch this anymore. I'm too depressed right now. I love him. And you know what? I've been watching Legion, and it is an X-Men spinoff, and he's the main character. Yeah. And I had no idea that that was him. And because I was like, I recognize him from somewhere. And then when I saw Beauty and the Beast, I was like, it's Matthew. And then I went back and I was like, it's Matthew. But he's lost so much weight and he looks so different. He's he's very different looking now than he was from Downton Abbey. But I think he's doing a great job in Legion. Although I have to say Legion is really all over the place. It's really hard for me to follow. I'm trying because I love the X-Men, but I'm kind of having a hard time with that one. But I did go see Logan as well.
Is Legion on Netflix?
Legion is on Hulu.
And Hulu, okay.
On Hulu. Okay.
Yeah. But I went to go see Logan because, like I said, I love the X-Men. Mm-hmm. And I'm just going to throw it out there. That was a really tough one for me. I've always liked the Wolverine movies. I liked all the origin stories. I like it, but I think it's pretty hardcore and gritty. I mean, he's always gritty, but this is exceptionally gritty for a Wolverine movie, and he just needs a shower all the time, and it's like an old guy movie because he's getting kind of old, you know, and it's like an old guy superhero, and you're just like, dude, you gotta, you know, get a walker or something. He was starting to go, so I'm like, you know, it's probably good to end this storyline here and kind of move on with the younger people.
So
it's time for him to start doing old guy movies and let the younger people take up the superhero stuff. So anyway,
I'm sure you would probably prefer that as well.
Yeah,
probably.
I didn't realize how well my fangirls were going to connect, but yeah, there's an X-Men connection there.
They are.
Awesome.
Come on, what do you have?
So I saw Beauty and the Beast as well, and I really, really enjoyed it. I read some reviews before I went just because I was so nervous, and if it was going to be horrible, I wanted to prepare myself. So there was one review that I read where the person who reviewed it didn't like it at all, and they thought that like action and the art was overdone, and I really disagreed with that once I saw it, because I'm like, it's 16th century France,
right?
It's a gilded era. Supposed to be like that, so that didn't bother me at all. I loved everyone that they cast. I loved all the actors. I appreciated that, like, seeing anything with Emma Watson except for Harry Potter. And one exception to that is This Is the End. You heard of that movie? Yeah, I saw that, and she was pretty funny in that movie. It's Seth Rogen and James Franco. It's that kind of movie. It was pretty hilarious, but you have to be in the right kind of mood for it. So I liked that. I was worried that for a while I was going to not be able to see Belle, that I would just see Hermione, but the more she became Belle to me. And so I liked that, seeing her in something different, and she did a really good job. The one thing I wanted to talk about with Belle, with Beauty and the Beast, is like, people talk all the time about how it's like an example of Stockholm Syndrome, and I just want to say, it is fucking not, okay? I'm sorry. I just have to put out there, this is my favorite Disney movie growing up. Stockholm Syndrome doesn't realize that they're being held against their will. That is Stockholm Syndrome. She knows. She is fully aware the entire time that she's being held against her will. Whether or not she should have gone back to the Beast is a different argument. I understand that. Whether or not he deserved for her to love him, I but it's not fucking Stockholm Syndrome. Okay? Do your research. Okay.
Okay, so I have a question. They talked about Shakespeare. Was Shakespeare even famous yet? Was he even writing yet?
He was writing.
Oh, yeah. Shakespeare was back in the
1400s. But was he famous enough to have been in the library there?
He was in the 1500s.
1500s? I think so.
Yeah. I thought he died in 1616. So he was in the late 1500s.
Mm-hmm.
Was it super famous?
He was born in the 1540s.
Yeah.
I don't know. I'm not sure if he would have been famous enough yet or not.
I mean, but they're very close in time there.
Beauty and the Beast, was it 1600s?
I'm not sure when it's set, but it seemed like very, very close to Shakespeare, almost too close to be able to be quoting him and having him be a famous in France. I'm just not sure.
Yeah, so he's...
Because, it's a different country.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, well, let's see here. Okay, so he was born... He died in 1616. What year is Beauty and the Beast set in? That they're, at... I'm just checking right now. It's, so... What era? I'm trying to figure out what era it is.
There is something that I saw... Go ahead. Did you find it?
I think it's supposed to be like 18th century France, so like the 1700s.
Yeah,
it's
1700s.
Okay, so they're far enough away.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
It would have spread. Okay. So that's another 100 years, probably.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, so this is like...
Just checking.
Yeah. No, that's a good question. I hadn't even thought about that. Okay. Yeah, no, that makes sense.
Yeah.
Cool.
So what are you fangirling about,
Maggie?
Then...
What, Amanda?
Oh, no, go ahead.
Oh, we're good. Okay. So I have two. I had actually decided on one a few weeks ago, before last episode for sure, because it's something that's happening tonight, and so I wanted to talk about it. And then, of course, in the interim, I forgot that I'd had that one that I was going to talk about, so I chose another one, too, so I'm going to talk about both of them. So the one that's tonight is I'm fangirling over Richard Rohr, who is a Franciscan priest who lives in New Mexico, not super far from Cali. How far away is that from you, Cali? Like
about 3.5 hours.
3.5 hours. Okay, so about as far as Dallas is from me. And he is actually coming to my church tonight to talk on creation care. He and then there are two other experts too who will be coming. And then the Nazarene Church is having Young Clergy Conference that'll be at my church or maybe at Southern Nazarene University this week. And he's going to be talking to them. And that was organized by some of the pastors at my church here in Oklahoma City. So pretty cool stuff happening. And I'm excited to get to hear Richard Rohr speak live in person. So that's happening tonight. Let's see, in a little over 2 hours from now, from recording time. So that's one. So that's one that I decided on a while ago. But the other one that I thought about this last week was I am really thankful and I guess fangirling over Twitter. Because there's so much that I owe to Twitter, really. Like this podcast, really, I owe to Twitter because I owe the ability to do this podcast to the Inglorious Pastards. And I owe my knowledge of the Inglorious Pastards to Twitter because I had gotten back on Twitter, maybe a year and a half ago or so, 2 years ago. I had actually set up my Twitter account back when I was working at the credit union. Let's see. So that's been over 5.5 years ago. So probably somewhere around 2011, 2000, 10, somewhere in there, because they were doing a employee social media thing. And so we could actually log on to Twitter at work as long as we were tweeting about like stuff we liked at the credit union. So I made a Twitter account then, and I tweeted a bit here and there. I mean, we could tweet from home, whatever, but and so it just never, like, I never caught on to it because at the time I'm like, I have too much to say. 140 characters isn't enough to say anything. And I still have a lot to say, but I figured it out. And threads are great. So
yes.
And I so I don't remember what it was that got me back in it. But because I did, and I was reading Finding God in the Waves by Mike McHarg, and I tweeted something about it. There was a sentence that just really struck me, and so I tweeted the sentence out. And I think that's, and I hashtagged Finding God in the Waves, and I think that's how Michael found me and started following me, and that's how I found them and got into the pub and started this podcast and have met amazing people. And I connected with people here in Oklahoma City, well, here in Oklahoma through Twitter and because of this. And also there's a lady in the Netherlands who I've connected with, who I'm going to go meet up with when my two besties and I are there in October. So it's pretty cool.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, I know. It's awesome. What's her, Sandra Ann Turnbull, who tweets at the guys a lot and tweets at us too. She's in the Netherlands, so I'm going to see her in October.
Sweet.
So, that's so
I
cool.
know, it's the coolest okay. thing.
She's not.
Oh, in, also about Twitter.
She's not in the pub, right?
She's not. Yeah, Sandra. She's $1.
Okay.
$1.
Dollar gets you in with all the rest of this.
Dollar gets you in. She's not, though. I think she would be great in there.
Yeah,
she would.
See, maybe she's just like, I'm calling out individual people now, guys. one more thing. So I have an announcement that relates to Twitter too. If you are in the Oklahoma City area or close to it, and once you drive in this Tuesday, so Tuesday the 28th of March, I'm doing a IRL meetup. So tweet at me at Becky Seville, if you want to get the details on that. We're going to meet at a local, Mexican food restaurant, here and just have dinner and chat. So yeah.
Nice.
I already have a few people, who have said that they want to come. So give me a tweet, if you hear this on Sunday night or on Monday so that I can call them and, tell them how many we'll have coming. So anyway, yeah.
Cool.
That's my announcement. Okay. anything else before we get into the unraveling?
I think we're good. No?
Okay. So next up is our unraveling segment.
For the unraveling, we are going to be speaking with Crystal Cheatham, who is a former student of me and my husband from high school. And she is now running the Bible app. Crystal, what's the Bible app called?
Our Bible app.
Our Bible app, which is a Bible app for the rest of us, basically anybody who feels left out by the other Bible apps, but somewhat specifically geared towards the LGBTQ, many longest acronym ever, group of people. Yeah. And she also does a podcast called Lord Have Mercy with one of her friends, and I've been binge listening to that, and I love it. So she's not afraid of any topic.
No. The more embarrassing.
They go right in. How are you doing, Crystal?
I'm excellent. I'm so happy to be here with you guys.
Yeah, we're excited.
I'm so happy to have reconnected with you. It's so awesome.
United. I know. It's crazy.
I know.
It's a small podcast world.
Right.
It is a small podcast world. So what is your life looking like these days? How did you get to a place where you were making a Bible app specifically geared towards that group?
So I came out shortly after college, and I had a really tough time with it because there weren't resources that kind of talked about being gay and being a Christian. And all the ones that were out there, I mean, they're still pretty good for tilt to today, but they weren't in common language. Like David Homeniak has this book. It's called something about like homosexuality in the Bible, and it's really good, but it's really hard to read. And so, but what I just didn't have anything that actually, you know, affirmed everything altogether. And so I started working on a project called the Identity Kit, which was a kit for queer youth. And then I moved on to working with Soulforce, Equality Writers. And then I moved on to the app. So it was kind of just like continuing to build on the idea that we needed more resources, or at least media that was contributing to the greater conversation, or at least affirming people where they were at. Yeah.
I have to say, I remember when you came out.
Because
you were on Facebook with my husband and I, and she always called him Coach because he was Coach then.
Coach
Adam. And we found out on Facebook, and both of us were just like, yeah, that makes sense.
Duh.
It didn't really faze us that much. I thought that was kind of funny because we both just looked at each other and went, yeah, probably.
That's so like good to know. Yeah, there's a handful of people, like people in my choir when I sang at Andrews University, who are just kind of just like, yeah, uh-huh, for sure.
Yeah.
But I didn't know. I wish somebody would have fucking told me about it. It would have been really nice, very helpful. Thanks.
Yeah. But, you know, you don't want to be like, so where are you at with that? You know, when you're someone's teacher, you kind of want to let them find themselves.
That's true, especially when you're at Blue Mountain Academy.
Especially when you're at Blue Mountain Academy.
People are getting kicked out for even the mention of it. It's crazy.
Yeah.
So I am joining the app, but I think it's important to know that it's not just for LGBTQ people. And yeah, that's a lot of letters. But the idea behind it was that there's a growing number of people in the Christian space who just don't identify with where conservative Christianity is going. It's just going towards the space that's alt-right and beyond that, like white nationalist. And I think it started with the conversation about LGBTQ people. And I just like to use the word queer, but it started with this conversation about queer, and Christians worldwide were like, oh my gosh, I don't know what to do with this. I'm just going to ignore it. And those of us who haven't done any study on what the Bible says about homosexuality, we're just going to side with the people that say that it's wrong, right? And so now that there's less of a middle ground, and now that in order to just kind of be like a non-political Christian, you just have to kind of go along with the right, I think that there's a lot more people who are standing up and saying, actually, no, I don't believe in purity culture. I kind of think it's bullshit. Or I want to move in with my boyfriend right now because that's what's financially right for me and what's right for me in general, but it doesn't detract from my relationship with God, you know? Right. And it's like, so it's not just for LGBT people. That's just my in. But, you know, there's also a ton of people who are, you know, finally talking, not finally, but are having bigger voices about like the color of Jesus. And how people, like even my parents, they were missionaries. They were very well-meaning missionaries. And they went back to Zambia, Africa, where my mom is from. And they did a bit of teaching and giving out health resources. But all of that is the tradition of colonization, is using religion to colonize other cultures and say, hey, here's white Jesus. You should let go of whatever culture that you have, and you should accept what the queen has decided or the president has decided is the right thing for you to do. So, I think it's the conversation on Christianity has been coded and very closed for a long time. Mm-hmm. And so I'm excited to see a different brand where people are reading the Bible and looking at it through the lens of their own experiences and creating stories and theologies and things that they can share with other people, because I think that we just kind of stopped growing as a faith community. We just stopped growing. So I think there's a lot more growing to do, and that involves people's stories, and that involves people coming out and kind of just doing more searching instead of just sitting in pews and Yeah, I could go on and on and
definitely.
On.
Definitely.
Yeah, and I think that would appeal to the people who listen to us and who listen to the Inglorious Pastards, because I think all three of us got in this, and most of the people, I mean, pretty much everyone in the pub too, because we don't go along with the conservative, the alt-right, and all of that. And we were seeing that too. And I am still in the church because of this community that I found. Yeah. And so this Bible app is going to be great for me, someone who identifies as a cis straight woman. I saw it first. Broderick Greer tweeted it out, and so I've already signed up to get it.
Good.
So he's I'm super excited.
Broderick Greer is going to be writing one of our devotionals too.
Oh, that's awesome.
Nice.
I'm so happy, but he's such a great Twitter follow, and like, I'm trying to build up the courage to like message him and say, can we interview you?
Yeah. Oh, I know. Yeah.
You should.
I've listened to his podcast for a long time. So the pastards, the end of the word pastors is turds instead of turs.
Yeah. What is that?
And so the sisters are the sisters. I don't know.
Okay, so it comes from our parent podcast. So we are actually hosted on the podcast feed of the Inglorious Pastards, which is a play off of the movie Inglorious Bastards.
Yeah.
But the three of them are former pastors. Two are brothers and one is a friend of theirs. And so they started their podcast. All three of us ladies are Patreon supporters of theirs. We met in their Patreon supporters group. It's called the Pastors Pub on Facebook. And after the election, the three of us were like, we need more women's voices out there. And so that's how this started. And so they're doing all of our producing. They're hosting us and not charging us. So that's what turd is. So we've taken on turd as our identity. T-E-R-D. Our identity of the people in the community with the pastors.
I love it.
That's what turd is. Yeah.
It's awesome. It's like family. And yeah, and if you want to join, I'm sure that wouldn't be a problem.
Facebook, always come to the pub. The pub is awesome.
No, yeah, it does sound like a great place to be, especially if you're able to find community, which is what I'm all about. It's finding people that you connect with. And
Yeah. I think one of the biggest parts of the pub for us is most of us are from the Midwest, or, you know, I'm kind of from the Southwest, and we're all deconstructing our religion. So, you know, our denomination, Crystal and I come from a denomination that's pretty hardcore fundamentalist. And so you get taught everything from a very young age. Yeah. And even though you're allowed to question, you're kind of not at the same time. I don't really know how to explain that, but it feels like you're just being told, well, it feels like they have a pat answer for everything. And then you just have to kind of accept those answers.
Yep.
And I first started questioning when I was at Blue Mountain, but I didn't tell any of you guys about it because I was a teacher and I wasn't allowed to do that.
It seemed like you were going through something. You were so badass. And like, if you're going to be a girl's dean, then I don't think cursing is something that you're supposed to do. And like, we would catch you all the time. Just like, just talking from your heart, which I think it's good to be expressive, but we knew.
It was terrible then. Oh yeah. But you know, it was Sergio Menente, who was actually the leadership teacher there, who sent me out of the church. He said, you need to go outside of the bubble and find other people in this world to be friends with. And so I started going to a Methodist Bible study, and that's where I discovered that I didn't know everything.
Wow.
I thought I was so smart and that I had all the answers and that I knew everything. But who knew that it would be Sergio who would fix me? But he sent me out. And after that, it was kind of a slow burn for a while, and then it was a snowball. Just before the election, it kind of really snowballed for me. So like 11 years of very slow, like, what is going on here in this world? And then all of a sudden, so yeah.
Sergio and Nancy were definitely doing God's work for those of us who had more questions than our counterparts. That's for sure. I had a really good connection with Nancy Menente. I wonder what she's doing right now. I have like I have this theory about the church itself. I think that when it comes to like dogma and religion and traditions and all of that, it kind of like fossilizes this thing that's supposed to be very natural and fluid and growing and more like nature. And so I see that there's a separation between spirituality, which is constantly growing and moving and changing as we change, and then this like fossilized dogmatic thing that the church is. And for some reason, we just kind of settle and say, okay, we figured out what works for our parents, and so we're just going to continue to do the same things over and over and over again. But that doesn't allow us to change. That doesn't allow us to learn who we are in the world. And I mean,
Yeah, and then there's the dissonance of you're feeling like change is happening and coming and you want to be part of that change, but with the dogma being fossilized, there's a conflict there. I feel that. Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
I think we're way behind.
Yeah. We are. We are way behind. We're way behind.
Well, and it used to be that the church was leading the culture, and now the church is being drug kicking and screaming by the culture.
Yeah.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. So, Crystal, did you ever watch the Seventh-day Adventist movie?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Janine Ankers is a friend. Yeah.
Okay.
She's the director, producer, I guess.
Yeah. I mean, I had a lot of friends in there, too.
Yeah.
So, I would say that documentary was what solidified in my mind that this is not as much of a problem as I ever thought it was. I mean, it really solidified in my mind that it's not a choice. It's who you are.
Mm-hmm.
Does that make sense?
Absolutely. I think that movie did a really great thing for our community in that it showed that it wasn't a black and white issue, which is what we're taught in fundamentalist settings, that everything's black and white and moral, you know, they just, right and wrong, black and white, and that's how you cut it. And it showed that, hey, pastors who have obviously spent a lot of time thinking about how they're going to raise their children in today's world, they also have gay kids. So you can't say that it had anything to do with how they were raised, that they were molested, that they didn't have like good fathers and all of the issues that, you know, people throw at it. And I really think that kind of just, it changed the way the church was, in the direction that the church was moving. It's still not where it needs to be, for sure.
No.
But I see that there are a lot of people who are kind of breaking away, and unfortunately I think that if the church doesn't catch on, the church is gonna fall.
I think it's already falling. Like, you go on Twitter and you just, like, it's so alternating, discouraging and encouraging. You see people like you, Broderick Greer, and people that we've connected with through the Pastor's Pub, and there's so many other Christians out there that are recognizing that what Christianity has become in our country isn't Christianity. But then you find so many people that just hold so tightly onto what we've been told we're supposed to be without it having any real foundation in the reality of people's lives, or people's struggles, or just the embodiment of what the fruits of the Spirit are supposed to be. I think it's already falling, if not, I think big parts of it have already fallen. Mm-hmm. And it's just, if Christianity is going to survive, it has to change. Like, it's always changed. It has always changed throughout the centuries. You just have to have a basic understanding of church history to see that, which, of course, is why I wasn't taught any church history whatsoever growing up in a fundamentalist Bible church.
Yeah. I don't know. I just think that they have to be willing to talk about the stories that are affirming to different kinds. You know what? The whole idea that we're brought up in Christian settings to see sexuality as like this horrible thing that we should be scared of, that once we dip our toe into it, just going to suck us in and like ruin our lives. I mean, that whole sex negative culture leads to there being a very hard line, or making it very difficult to come to understand Bible texts that talk about sex. And so what I wish that we had when I was a kid were discussions about Song of Solomon, you know, instead of just like tucking it away and be like, that's not there, because Song of Solomon is dirty.
Yeah.
It is some juicy novella kind of shit going on there. Mm-hmm. And they are not married and they're lovemaking everywhere. And that relationship is totally physical. And I wish that there was some context to that, you know, in the same way that I know, like in today's sex culture, everyone's saying that abstinence is not the way, education is the way. I really wish that we had the education so that we could better understand sexuality altogether, which wasn't there. And
I wish that we were more open to talking about it with people who have been alive longer. I wish that older people weren't so afraid of talking about it, because I think there's a lot to be learned from people who've been in sexual relationships for 75 years or whatever. I wish that it wasn't so scary for them, because I know that I'm in what I call the old guy book club, and it's like all these people over 65, and I learned so much from them because they went through like the first or second Reconstruction. You know, they've been a part of the first civil rights movement. They just know so much, and they've been through so much, and I can learn so much from them. But sex seems to be a topic that no one wants to talk about, especially if they're over 65. And you can't talk about it with kids. I mean, I'm kind of lucky because my mom was always pretty open to letting me talk to her about pretty much whatever I wanted. But I don't know. It was only her, and it always felt like a taboo topic with everybody else.
Yeah. And like, and I know I'm not alone in that. In my experience, I couldn't even do that with my mom. Like, I got like the basic, you know, this is how sex works, this is how babies are made talk. But I never got anything more than that. I didn't know what pleasure was supposed to feel like. I didn't even know if I was supposed to enjoy sex. Mm-hmm. Like, I remember after my mom gave me the sex talk, it took me like 5 years to realize that usually the first time, if a couple's waiting until they get married, usually the first time they have sex is on the wedding night. I thought it was something that they built up to. So, I was like, I remember finally just asking someone, so how long do you wait till after you're married to have sex? And they're like,
immediately.
Probably don't wait.
Right away.
Yeah.
Between the ceremony and the reception, that's when you do it.
That's why it's so long for them to come in. I got it now.
Oh, man. Yeah. I mean, yeah. I think everything for me kind of stems from the discussion on sex, because through the idea that women had to cover themselves up in order to keep men from sinning, they developed these really staunch and disgusting gender roles, and they used the Bible to back up those disgusting gender roles for women. And so I mean, I grew up with three brothers, and I was an equal amongst all of them. But once I went to like Blue Mountain Academy, that's when I really started to see, okay, the perfect woman is supposed to be like a pastor's wife. That's crazy. And she's supposed to be able to cook and clean and put her education, even her job, second. And, you know, in the words of the Bible, the woman is what, she's like the neck and the husband's the head or something like that. And women
that's,
are supposed to
be. That's my big fat Greek wedding.
I don't think that's even in the Bible.
It's not in the Bible. That is definitely not in the Bible.
Maybe that's my big fat Greek wedding. I'm sorry. I can't.
But it's something that gets said.
But like that nobody was taking, like, we just kind of accepted those Bible verses and lived our lives kind of like peripherally looking at them. And I mean, that's the way I think that we also decided to kind of peripherally look at the conversations going on about homosexuality. We just kind of said, well, somebody has figured out these 8 clobber texts, these texts that are anti-gay or talk about why homosexuality is bad. And we're not going to go any further to kind of understand what those texts really say. But also, we're not going to go a step further to find affirming texts. Like, there are so many affirming texts in the Bible for LGBTQ people, LGBT identity, different interpretations of really huge Bible characters that that we love, right? Yeah.
And like David and Jonathan. Hello. Right? Hello.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Anyone? Okay.
I know. I understand what you're saying. I understand what you're saying, Becky. Like, I like that version a lot better.
Yeah.
I think that there's a lot of things like that that we just haven't taken the time to take a step further and really think about from the perspective of somebody who is woke or just, you know, more liberal in how we digest the Bible.
Yeah.
I think that's part of the whole Bible, though. I mean, I read the Bible. I mean, you know how it is in Adventist schools. You read the Bible, you study the Bible, you hear about the Bible, but it's always the English Protestant Bible. Mm-hmm. And it's very rare that we actually go into the Greek or into the Hebrew. And when they do, it's usually to prove a point and not to help us learn anything.
Yeah.
It's not to help us learn anything that they haven't already decided is what they want us to learn. Mm-hmm. So, you know, it's interesting to go into the Bible now and study out so much more than I ever did before. I mean, I'm reading it for myself and trying to figure out the cultural context for myself and just kind of breaking out of that echo chamber. It's difficult, but it's happening. I mean, it's happened already. So,
yeah,
I know, you know where I'm coming from, though.
Absolutely. And that's where our Bible app comes in. Just like you guys have been able to find community, I think so many of us are searching for that as well. And in an interview I gave Essence Magazine, I don't think it's going to come out for The Advocate. I talked a bit about what was the subject? I just got
deconstruction.
Find community and Bible app.
Yeah, but where was I going? I can't remember anymore. Finding community.
Damn it,
it's gone. Sorry.
Oh. If you remember, feel free to interrupt who was ever talking. It's like, oh, I remember. Know. Yeah,
my cat's outside, and that's why I was just like, "Where's Teddy?" And like, all I had too many thoughts in my head. And that's
yeah.
Sorry.
That's my life.
Oh, man.
Yeah. Well, I think the questioning community, I don't think that we're very close to each other oftentimes in proximity. So thank God for the internet, because I think that I would be, I remember I'm still on the church board. I came back from a church board meeting. Just, I know Crystal's face is like, oh my gosh, are you serious right now? Came back from a church board meeting and just felt like so disconnected from that whole thing. Mm-hmm. And sat on the edge of my bathtub and just cried my eyes out and went straight into the pub. And was just like, I'm crying in my bathtub with a giant glass of wine.
I remember that day.
I do too. Yeah.
We drink now. Woo!
Oh, yeah.
Crystal's like, what? You do what?
Gosh, yeah. I started drinking and swearing like in the last year. So, woo! It's amazing.
You should have seen her in Indiana last month.
Yeah?
Yeah. You should have seen Becky in Indiana last month. She was coming off a, like, you did no alcohol January or something, right?
Oh, yeah. Back in January, we had a live event for the Pastor's podcast recording, and I was doing dry January, and I took a hiatus from that for the live event, and I drank way too much vodka and too many beers, and it all came out. It was not good.
It was up until that point. You were pretty happy, though.
Yeah. Oh. Yeah. Yeah. I know. It's funny. I didn't feel weird. Like, but Matt was saying, "Yeah, I think you're a little drunk." I'm like, I feel okay.
I think a lot of us didn't learn how to drink. I didn't learn how to drink till, I mean, everyone else, all of my friends now drank since high school. And college is where you're supposed to like go wild. But that didn't happen for me. I didn't start drinking until I was basically out of college.
Yeah. So. I went to a Christian university. So, and it was a no drinking place too. Yeah. I drank some, but no, I didn't learn how to drink there.
Yeah.
I think I'm the only odd one out on this. Cause like my parents separated by the time I was 16 and my mom really wanted me to respect alcohol. Mm-hmm. And so she started me on a blueberry porter, my first beer, when I was 16. And so I was so glad she started me on that, because then I tasted Bud Light in college and I was like, nope. It's disgusting.
Like, I know much better. I know much
better. Oh my gosh. So Crystal, where can we find the kit? Or do you still do the kit?
The kit is going to be available on the app. I mean, it was a nonprofit, and I was just, you know, I was freshly out of grad school, so I was still pretty broke, and I just could not get the nonprofit to a place where it was self-sustaining, and so I had to drop it. But the kit, it's the mm-hmm. identity kit for queer Christian youth. It's going to be one of the devotionals available to teens on the Bible app. Yeah.
Awesome. Well, I'm glad to hear you say that the Bible app is for more than just the queer community, because absolutely. The queer community is a very small fraction of the community, the United States population. It's only 3.8% of the population, according to the last census. Yeah. That's pretty small. So it's good that you've got more people able to be a part of that community, that you feel like it's not just geared towards them. It's geared toward all of us.
And I bet there's more. It's just that's all that we have numbers for.
You know, yeah. And honestly, I created it because I think everybody has the YouVersion Holy Bible app on their phone, because you can sit in church and you can pull up the Bible, and it also has devotionals. But I got so frustrated with that, because I would start reading something and then, you know, the author would throw out something about homosexuals and use it as like, hey, gay people are bad and you have to steer your life in this direction. Or they would talk about like sex and women and abortion in like these ways. And it was so disruptive. Yeah. It was so disruptive to everything. And so that's really why the Bible app came out. And it's just like, everybody should have access to this, and everybody should be looking for their community. And they should stop using YouVersion, which is just like a bullshit way to spread just like horrible rhetoric and propaganda.
And plus, like no one like lives in a vacuum, and so the only way I think the Christian community is really going to grow is if we learn how to give space for and grow alongside of minority voices, whether it's the queer community or people of color, immigrants, like. No matter what, like, we're all together in this.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we need to act.
Fighting for the same thing, and that is taking back our faith for something that isn't destructive.
Yeah.
And if we're all just, like, in our own lanes, like, not talking to each other, even if we support each other, like, that's eventually not going to go anywhere. Mm-hmm. So.
Amen.
I'm so happy that you're doing this. Yeah. Is the app already available?
No, it's not.
How do people get it when it comes out, and when is it coming out?
Yeah, so it's going to come out in June, and we're super excited about it. Mm-hmm. And people should go to ourbibleapp.com and basically sign up so that you know that it's there as soon as it launches, and we'll send it straight to your phone. And I mean, once you put in your email address, we're not going to, you know, bombard you with emails and stuff, but every once in a while something really cool does happen in like the Our Bible App community, and if you're up for it, we'll send you an email about that too. But yeah, go to ourbibleapp.com and put your name in. I will say that we are still fundraising, because we're starting to pay our authors just to make sure that our library is fully populated once it's out. And so we're asking people to, they can, if somebody would like to submit a devotional, they can go to crystalcheatham.com/submissions and submit a devotional. But if they just want to help with the funding, you can go to the merch section at Our Bible App and buy one of our unicorn t-shirts. So it's actually a unicorn.
Azima. Oh, even better. I love it.
Right? It's so cool. And it's for believers of all stripes. And that's what we're trying to push towards. And
oh, that's like great.
A more affirming way of talking about the marginalized communities. So we hope people will check it out. I think it's so cute.
Yeah, I will have to look at that. Okay, and you said if they want to submit a devotional, yes, yeah, crystalcheatham.com/submissions.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. Yeah. And then if they just want to donate, it's on the ourbibleapp.com website.
/merch
To buy the t-shirt. Okay.
Or a mug.
Awesome.
Well, Crystal, how can people find you online and find your podcast?
Yeah, everything that I do is at Crystal Cheatham.
Okay.
And the podcast is on my website. Lord have mercy. Lord have mercy.
Yeah. Which is an awesome podcast. I love it so much.
I do too. I've been listening to it too.
I'm glad you guys like it.
So good. My
co-host, Reverend Alba, likes to go as Reverend, yeah, Sex, because she's a reverend, but she's also a sexologist, so she gets invited to these places around the world to talk about this stuff.
And oh my gosh, it's amazing.
That's a great, yeah, combination.
Did she take like personal appointments from people?
I think Alba definitely would. Okay. Alba's recently been more firm about pronouns. So Alba goes by they, them, there. Yeah, they are fucking fantastic. One of my favorite human beings in the world. And I'm really honored that they decided to shut up shop on my podcast.
Yeah.
That's amazing.
They're a great resource. And I just heard the podcast where you all were talking about their child. And the child's pronouns and everything, and how all that was going. It was so touching, because the child has so much self-awareness.
Yes,
it was just inspiring, very inspiring.
I mean, I wish that you could meet them. Alba's kid is freaking phenomenal. Mm-hmm. Maybe one day.
I would love to hear Alba and Hillary talk to each other.
For real, that'd be great. We have,
right?
Have you? Hillary, there's a
no.
I know that's not
Hillary. There's a Hillary McBride who's been on the Pastor's Podcast and is going to be on our podcast too. She is a feminist counselor up in Canada, okay, and she's talked about relationships and having an I-thou relationship instead of an I-it relationship with another human being, and how the aim is to be I-thou, which respects the image of God in each other, and respects each other's personhood.
Yeah. Yeah. And you're having her on the podcast. Awesome.
We will be, yes.
We haven't scheduled a date yet, but she confirmed today that she would like to come on, so we're super excited.
Yeah,
you should listen to the pastor's ones. They're quite good. Yeah. They were always mind blowing for me.
I am subscribing right now.
Awesome.
You guys are so freaking cool.
Well, thank you. You are too.
I'm glad that I got to spend this time with you. Seriously, it's good to know that that there is more community out there.
Absolutely,
and that you guys are definitely fighting the good fight too. Like, I'm really honored that you guys decided to have me on your podcast.
Well, thanks for coming on.
We're so honored. Yeah, this is great. It's been really fun just talking to you. We'll have to do it again when we have a little more time.
I would love to have all of you on. Lord have mercy.
Yes. We'll keep in touch with you and get on there.
Yeah, yeah, we'll have to find like a really good topic to talk about, something that
great. Can we talk about the diamond of virginity, please, that I just want to crush into the ground?
Oh, yeah.
Absolutely. I'm doing a podcast on sexual shame, and Reverend Alba has a whole thing that they're writing about that and is going to put together. So maybe we could have you on the first part of it in the interview.
Oh, that'd be great.
Yeah.
Oh, excellent. I would love that.
Excellent. Yes.
Well, we know you have something else that you're having to do, so we don't want to keep you too long.
Yeah, my mom.
Yeah.
Not good.
Uh-oh. So, well, thanks so much for being on, Crystal.
Thanks, guys. I'll talk
to you again.
Bye.
Bye.
Hi, everyone. My name is Erin Reagan, and welcome to the Ask a Science Turd segment. Today, I'm going to talk a little bit about what typical adolescent development looks like and a few signs to look for that your teen might be experiencing mental health issues such as depression and/or anxiety. A little bit of background about me. I am a licensed mental health counselor, and I work mostly with teenagers and young adults in Bloomington, Indiana. I am going to talk today about a question I get often from parents of my teen clients, and the question can be summed up basically like this. My child is moodier than usual. They spend more time in their room than they do any other room of the house. They give me one-word answers to questions when I used to not be able to get them to stop talking to me. They want to dye their hair crazy colors and wear different kinds of clothes. They're sleeping more, and their appetite has greatly increased. Are these things normal for teenagers, or should I be concerned? I tell parents an answer that I found very frustrating while I was in grad school. It depends. So let's start with what's normal, or a much better word for it would be typical. What does typical adolescent development look like? Adolescence is a time of growing, changing, and developing independence. During adolescence, the teen is in the process of becoming their own person by learning and developing independence away from their primary caregivers. They're in the process of establishing who they are in the world outside of their nuclear family and figuring out what their identity is and what they believe. Because they are exercising independence, it is typical to see your teen spending more time with friends or even more time alone. It's typical for them to try different hairstyles or clothing styles or want to get a piercing or tattoo. Also, a part of this independence thing is they're in the process of learning how to think for themselves. And so an increase in conflict between you and your teenage child is also pretty typical. Instead of coming to mom and dad for help with problems, for example, like issues with friends, they start to try to take care of those problems themselves. And not always how mom and dad would have liked them to. Some amount of moodiness and anxiety or nervousness is also to be expected and is pretty typical for adolescents. Teens deal with a ton of issues and responsibilities all at once. And they're feeling much more of the intensity of their emotions as compared to when they were younger. Teens deal with a multitude of issues just at school. For example, getting decent grades so that they don't get in trouble at home or made fun of for being stupid at school. Dressing in a certain way so that they fit in. Buying the newest technology or newest phone so that they fit in. Social pressures of dating and romantic relationships and feelings. Dealing with our bodies physically changing through puberty. Social pressure to drink or use drugs or skip school or cheat on a test. They're trying to balance school and friends and family and extracurriculars and after school jobs. And the list goes on and on and on. And those are just issues that they deal with at school. I think we'd all be a bit moody and tired. And if you think back to when you were a teenager, you might identify with some of this. So let's talk about what isn't so typical for adolescent development. And we'll start with depression. With depression, your teenager might feel sad, empty, hopeless, and they'll feel frustrated or angry even at very, very small things. And you'll see this occurring for most of the day or nearly every day for 2 weeks. And that is getting to the definition of what a depressive episode would look like. In addition, depression in your teenager might also look like not caring about things or activities that they used to enjoy. You might see that they have weight loss when they're not dieting, or weight gain from eating too much. They might have trouble falling asleep or staying asleep or sleeping much more than usual. You might see them move or talk more slowly, feeling restless or having trouble sitting still, feeling tired or feeling like they don't have any energy. The teen might feel worthless or very guilty. They might also have trouble concentrating. They might have trouble remembering information and trouble making decisions. And also, your teen might be thinking of dying or killing themselves. Often we see depression and anxiety go hand in hand, and thus there's a high comorbidity between anxiety and depressive disorders. American Heritage Medical defines anxiety as a state of intense apprehension, uncertainty, and fear resulting from the anticipation of a threatening event or situation, often to a degree that normal physical and psychological functioning is disrupted. A few of the physiological symptoms of anxiety include muscle tension, heart palpitations, sweating, dizziness, or shortness of breath. Emotional symptoms of anxiety include restlessness, a sense of impending doom, fear of dying, fear of embarrassment or humiliation, especially in social situations, or fear of something terrible happening. So now that we've talked a little bit about what typical adolescent development like and symptoms of depression and anxiety, what are the best things you can do as a parent to determine if your child is acting like a typical teenager or if there are mental health issues present? Talk to your child and ask them what's going on. That is one of the best things that you can do as a parent to help determine if what's going on is more typical or if you need to get some things checked out. Ask them directly if they're feeling depressed or anxious. Ask them if anything is bothering them. And if they won't talk to you, and this brings me to my second thing parents can do, take them to see a therapist. If you didn't hear anything during this segment, please hear this. Mental health is very important, and it's tied in with your child's overall health. Mental and emotional health and physical health all affect one another, in which your teen can feel off if just one aspect of their health is suffering. If you have any concerns whatsoever that your teen might be depressed, anxious, or dealing with another mental health issue, take them to see a therapist. Or take them to see their primary care physician and tell them your concerns if you feel more comfortable talking with a doctor that you already have a relationship with. And then in which case, maybe that doctor can help refer you to a therapist if they determine that they see a need. So that concludes this segment. You can find resources and references about this information at the National Institute of Mental Health and the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention. Thank you guys so much for listening. And remember, please take care of your mental health.
Okay, for feedback, we had the hashtag last time, Naked Under a Bush, and we had Sandra and Turnbull. We're all naked under a bush until we roll into the sun. You were someone's son today. I think she was talking to Carrie.
Yeah, I think so. Nice. I think she was the sun for many people with how much feedback we got about her story.
Yeah, we did. She was great. Yeah. She was really good. And one thing, I was talking to some of my coworkers, knew that I was going to be interviewing someone who was transgender. And they were like, well, how are you going to deal with that? And I said, I don't know. So I met with, you know, we did our interview, and I was just telling my coworkers, people are just people. All people are just people. And she's just a nice person. Yeah. So it wasn't about any of that. And I think something major that I learned from that episode is just, and I think I've always kind of had this idea in my head, but it really solidified it, was you can't talk about groups, and you can't put groups of people into boxes, because everybody is their own individual person. And so as much as we can talk about people being marginalized or whatever, in the end, when you meet a person who's just another person, either you're going to like them or you're not, based on the merits of who they are, not of what box they fit into or what category in society maybe they fit into.
And I think what Carrie was saying was that too, like how in the transgender community, she's seen transgender people react on various, on a wide spectrum to other people, into how, into the questions that they get. And so, yeah, each person really is their own person, is an individual.
Yeah. I mean, we can Enneagram ourselves to death, but in the end, we're all so incredibly unique. That,
right. Like Brad, Polly and I are both 5-wing 6s, but we're not the same person.
No.
You're very different people.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And we just kind of have to be willing to meet people where they're at. Mm-hmm. That was something Crystal, I don't know if you guys have seen the pictures of her on her website or on her Facebook or anything, but she has a picture of herself holding a sign that just says, meet people where they're at. Yeah. It's really good. Yeah. I like it.
And that's kind of what we talked to about with her too. It's just like, it's so important for us to attempt to be as, or acknowledge intersectionality as much as possible, because it takes meeting people, being aware of other people that are different from yourself, and being intentional as much as you can at exposing yourself to people that are different from you, because that's what Jesus did.
Yeah,
that's what he did.
Right.
We can use the classifications that we put people in to an extent to help us understand more, but when we use that to put people into a box and then shove them into a corner, that's when we're using it all wrong, because everybody is their own person, and you just can't stick them all in a box together, because they're just not always the same.
Yep.
So, you know. Anyway, our other feedback was Mike McVeigh. If your boobs are in the top drawer, hashtag, that was one of our alternate hashtags. If your hashtag boobs are in the top drawer, you might be lying, hashtag naked under a bush, hashtag gotta be smoking weed. He really got into the hashtags. He really listened to the episode.
Yeah.
Good for you, Mike McVeigh, listening to the episode right up until the last second. Well done.
Awesome.
And I think Amanda's got a couple more tweets that weren't according to the hashtag.
Yeah, so these didn't have the hashtag, but just, we got a lot of people that tweeted at us because they were just so touched by Carrie's interview. And she's not on Twitter, so I just wanted to make sure.
Right.
Brian at Twisted Sisters, and he's at Brian O'Dean on Twitter. I'm convinced the stories like Carrie Lynn's are the missing link between fear and love, tolerance and intolerance. John Mark or Matea at Epictilic. At Twisted Sisters, just listen to the episode where you interviewed Carrie. Can one of you tell her how I appreciate her gracefulness?
I did.
Courtney, sorry, what did you say?
No, I was just going to say, like, when I saw that tweet, she wasn't home. She was actually out helping her friend at the hospital. And so when she came home, I told her.
Yeah, we got a lot of good feedback. Courtney Vrablik, at Savage Pie, and I'm sorry if I mispronounced that. Please let us know how to say it right. She said, at his assistants, thank you for this episode, and deep thanks to Carrie for her transparency and sharing her heart. Brad Polly, at Polly Named Brad, said, Thanks for the conversation this week. Heartbreaking, but very educational and much needed. And then Megan Jessup at Megan_Jessup said, tonight's Twisted Sisters podcast was so moving. You ladies are amazing. Carrie included.
Yay.
Aww, thanks.
There's some really, really good feedback.
So if people want to be mentioned on the show, we didn't have any 5-star reviews. If you leave us a 5-star review on iTunes, we'll read it on air. But we didn't have any this week. And if you want to get mentioned because of a tweet, you've got to use one of our hashtags. And what hashtags do we have for this episode, ladies?
So we are actually doing this episode, recording this episode by ourselves today. So we don't have any Michael hashtags today.
No Michael hashtags.
So we'll start with mine.
Okay.
So I have hashtag still tastes like fire. Hashtag yep. Alligator wrestling class.
I have that too.
Hashtag full on zoo. Hashtag Morris the alligator. Hashtag naked tours. Hashtag get a walker. Hashtag that kind of movie.
Oh my gosh.
Hashtag not Stockholm syndrome.
Nice.
And it, hashtag that makes sense. Hashtag I like to use the word queer. Hashtag hardcore fundamentalist. Hashtag you were so badass.
Thank you.
Hashtag it's not a choice, it's who you are.
Yep.
Okay, this one might be my favorite one. Hashtag they're lovemaking everywhere.
Oh, Song of Solomon. Oh my gosh.
Yeah. Hashtag between ceremony and reception. Oh, that's the number two for me. Hashtag that's not in the Bible. Hashtag zebracorn. Hashtag believers of all stripes. Hashtag that's yes. what Jesus did. And hashtag no Michael hashtags. That's what I got. Good.
Okay, I have hashtag it's still like fire. Hashtag tastes like pineapple juice. Hashtag alligator wrestling class. Hashtag alligators fat on tilapia. Hashtag going full on zoo. Hashtag pastor on a naked cave tour. Hashtag hashtag not fucking Stockholm syndrome.
Yeah, see, I left it out. I was going to, but yeah.
And then hashtag affirm everything altogether. Hashtag different brand of Christianity. And hashtag Song of Solomon is dirty.
Yeah.
Okay. I've got hashtag here's white Jesus. Hashtag that's what a turd is. Hashtag fossilized dogma. Hashtag kicking and screaming. Hashtag juicy novella shit. Crystal provided us with a lot of good hashtags.
She did.
Yeah, good.
Hashtag double fisting it. Hashtag soccer nerd. Hashtag tripping out for a while. Hashtag naked cave tours. Hashtag famous alligators. Hashtag he's alive. Hashtag X-Men connection. And hashtag fangirling over Richard Rohr.
Ah, okay. So which one I like? Okay, so I like Song of Solomon is dirty, or whatever it was.
But I really like the Naked Cave Tours because we all have it.
I like Naked Cave Tours too. Yeah, like
okay, so okay, we all have
tours. Right. It should be whatever we have a consensus on, and that was a good one.
Yeah, we all did. All
right, have so do we version. Want? So do you want Naked Cave Tour, On a Naked Cave Tour,
past. Let's do naked cave tour because it's short enough that they can put some other stuff.
Naked cave tour? Okay.
Naked cave tour? All right. So if you want to be mentioned on the show, hashtag us, hashtag us with naked cave tour or one of our alternate hashtags.
Yep. Or make your own up. We love it when people figure out their own. That's awesome.
Yeah. Always good.
So hit us up with hashtag naked cave tour on Twitter at Twisted Sisters. Also, you can get into the Pastards Pub with us if you go to patreon.com/pastordspodcast and donate at least a dollar per month, and it'll be the best dollar that you spend each month. Or you can do more. You could do $4 and be mentioned on their podcast as providing their round.
That's 16. That's $12. Yeah, or it's 12. It's 4. It's 12.
Oh, did it change?
Okay. Yeah.
Oh, but. Yeah. Okay. Anyway, there are other things that you can do. You can do more and get other rewards, but you can do just a dollar or two and get in there.
It's worth it. It is worth it, people.
It's so worth it. Okay, so Twisted Sisters on Twitter. Also, check out our WordPress site, which is twistedsisters.wordpress.com. Mm-hmm. And that's where we'll have our show notes. And that's right. I am at Becky Seville on Twitter.
And I'm at CallieSurf79 on Twitter.
Yes, you got it. Good job.
I totally got it.
Woo! And I am still at Indwelt Daughter. I'm going to change it. I haven't changed it yet. Yeah, we'll see.
We'll let you know when she does. Or she'll let you know when she does. So, okay. And so, closing time. Amanda has our cultural input for the week.
All right. This is a poem by Billy Collins. He is my favorite poet from high school. And this poem is entitled Japan. Today I passed the time reading a favorite haiku, saying the few words over and over. It feels like eating the same small, perfect grape again and again. I walk through the house reciting it and leave its letters falling through the air of every room. I stand by the big silence of the piano and say it. A painting of the sea, I tap out its rhythm on an empty shelf. I listen to myself saying it, then I say it without listening. Then I hear it without saying it. And when the dog looks up at me, I kneel down on the floor and whisper it into each of his long white ears. It's the one about the one-ton temple bell with the moth sleeping on its surface. And every time I say it, I feel the excruciating pressure of the moth on the surface of the iron bell. When I say it at the window, the bell is the world and I am the moth resting there. When I say it at the mirror, I am the heavy bell and the moth is life with his papery wings. And later, when I say it to you in the dark, you are the bell, and I am the tongue of the bell ringing you, and the moth lane, and moves like a hinge in the air above our bed.